thank you, everybody. It's good to be with you all again today. We like having these press briefings, and hopefully you enjoy them as well, just to get up to date as things continue to change and evolve very quickly. And so much like we've done with prior briefings, we'll just give you a sense of what we're seeing, of course, share some of the data, and also field some questions. In particular, I imagine, you know, where we're at right now with the vaccine, we thought there's a lot of good information to update you all with. So we'll go ahead and start in the interest of time here. We are seeing some promising trends really over the last 7 to 10 days. I know that we've spoken with you all before, really since November, we've seen a very concerning, consistent uptick in activity. We are still at concerning levels, but the good news is that over the last week to 10 days, we've seen some leveling off and even downtrending. If we continue to see that, obviously that'll make us feel a lot more comfortable and reassured. But again, if you look at the actual levels that they're at, it's still at a significant level of activity. So we're still very cautious and guarded on that. The other is, much like everybody's probably aware, the vaccination efforts are well afoot. It's been over a month now since we started administering vaccines. I think many of you probably saw the Commonwealth, Pennsylvania, release an expanded set of criteria earlier in the week. And for now, just by way of reminder, it really is all the healthcare workers, including others who are above the age of 65, and then others who are between the ages of 16 and 64, but do have one of the high-risk medical conditions as identified in those state guidelines. So that's who's up to bat right now. And then with the coming weeks and months, we'll continue to cascade and expand as the state's guidelines also do that. And we're really trying to impress upon folks that the vaccination effort, it will take time. And it's really limited by just making sure that there's supply, but also a lot of logistics and also a lot of capacity in terms of people to actually administer the vaccines. And as all of those things happen, as we've said before, as the logistics allow, as the supply allows, as the staffing allows, we're getting those shots into people's arms as quickly as possible. But that will be an effort for the weeks and months to come. I think the other is to take the opportunity to remind folks that even with the vaccination, we still, as a community, as a population, need to continue the mitigation efforts, whether it's masking or distancing efforts, hand hygiene, all of the same things that we've been stressing before. I think those are the key points for today. So let me go ahead and delve into the data. As I mentioned, you're probably seeing the graph, and you could see that it's leveled off a little bit in the last week to 10 days, but it does continue at incredibly high numbers, which suggests that we're still seeing full-blown community spread. We've also talked previously about how the number of positive tests that we see throughout the pandemic has really served as a leading indicator, which predicts pretty well what we can expect to see inside our hospitals in the week or two that follow. December, just by way of reminder, we saw on average probably a little over 400 positive tests per day, with a positive testing rate of 23%. Again, these are sort of the leading indicators that allow us to track what the virus is doing and the level of activity in the community. So far, in the 3 weeks through January, we've seen about 260 positive tests per day on average, with a positivity rate of 19%. So both of those have trended a little bit downward, which is a good thing. But by way of reminder again, I want to make sure we can put this into context. Back in the summer, we were at a positive testing rate that was below 3%. So we still have a long ways to go to get to those summer levels where the virus was a lot more managed. And so we're looking forward to the continued downward trends. And as we see that, I think that'll make us all feel a lot better. And of course, with the mitigation efforts and now with the vaccine coming on board, I think we're hopefully better positioned to continue to see those downward trends. In our hospital, We're also seeing those trends start to head back in the right direction. So if the hospitalizations are the lagging indicator, we talked about the test positive numbers and the testing positive rate as the leading indicators. Hospital activity being the lagging indicator, that has trended in the right direction, as you can see on the graph. The peak number of inpatients that we ever had was on December 27th, and that was 350. And you could see that this week, we're sort of hovering in the 220 to 250 range. And so it has come down, but that 220 to 250 range is still a pretty high level to be at, pretty much double what we were back in the spring at our peak. And so there's still a long way to go, a lot of work to do. I think it's premature to celebrate, but at the same time, I think it is somewhat reassuring, these downward trends over the last 7 to 10 days. You'll also remember that we've talked a lot about capacity, hospital capacity, staffing capacity, and so forth. And these levels that we're at right now, they are still at a sufficiently high level that it pushes right up against the capacity that we have. And that does create challenges for us in getting to the other care needs that are out there in the community. And so you've heard us use the analogy of the dimmer switch instead of the light switch, and we've said that we're able to dial down things like elective, non-urgent procedures or services in order to create that extra capacity. We've been doing that, and if we can keep getting the COVID activity lower, we'll be able to dial a lot of those services back up, which would be a good thing for all those folks who have those care needs. I think the other is care to the non-COVID patients. We've talked quite a bit about how the impact isn't just on those who have COVID, but it's also on those who don't have COVID, who happen to get the heart attacks or the strokes or the appendix issues or the gallbladder issues or need their hip replaced or what have you. Those folks are also impacted by the level of COVID activity in the communities and therefore in the hospitals, because of course, those procedures or those services, the faster we can get to those, the better. And I think it's worth clarifying that at every step of the way, anything that's urgent or emergent, we've been hard at work and still doing those services throughout the pandemic. But the ones that are, you know, one notch less urgent or less emergent, we want to be getting back to those services as quickly as possible as well. And so this is why all of the efforts that we talk about, the mitigation prevention efforts, but also the vaccination effort, becomes so important. So let me turn to the vaccine. I think the good news here is we're already starting to see early evidence that it's working, much like the research findings and the scientific evidence around both of the vaccines that are available. We are just starting to see the first evidence of that in our employees. You'll remember that the state had gone out with healthcare employees as the first wave of people that were getting vaccinated back in mid-December. And so now we've actually been tracking what our employee positive tests per day has been. And just recently, really in the last 10 days, we've seen that trend downwards. It's dropped by over 40%. And we expect that to continue to drop as the impact of more and more of our employees being vaccinated kicks in. At the same time, we've been aggressively delivering vaccine outside of Geisinger as well to all of the healthcare providers out in the communities who are also part of that 1A. And as I mentioned earlier this week, with the expansion to the 65 older population and the 16 to 64 with the high-risk condition category, we've been hard at work in continuing to expand our vaccination efforts. At this point, we have administered over 30,000 vaccines, and that's probably even higher by now, because I believe that's a number from yesterday. 22,000 of those have been first doses, with another 7 or 8,000 being second doses. We are now at a clip where we're delivering literally thousands of vaccinations every day into people's arms. As far as the Geisinger workforce, we have about two-thirds of our workforce vaccinated at this point, which is exciting. There are some of those that are still working their way through the second doses. But that's a pretty good number. We hope that'll continue to climb, and we know that there are still folks interested in getting the vaccine, and we are strongly encouraging it, as you can imagine. I think we get a lot of questions from time to time about how are we distributing the vaccine and so forth. And what we've said, and it still holds to be true, is as the supplies allow for, as the logistics allow for, as the staffing allows for, as soon as we get the vaccines, we're scheduling folks and delivering them and getting them into people's arms. I think that's probably the easiest way to describe our approach. We've been keeping close contact with the state and very closely adhering to each of the guidelines released by the state, which also mirror some of the guidelines coming down from the CDC and the feds. As a reminder, we mentioned earlier the grouping that we're in. We are still in group 1A. What changed this week was a couple categories of folks, the 65 and older and the 16 to 64 with the high-risk condition. They moved those folks into the 1A category as well. And so we are still working our way through that. And we've been encouraging folks to go on our website, which is the easiest way to get information about how to go about getting scheduled. It's geisinger.org/COVIDVAX, V-A-X. And there you'll find information on how you can go about scheduling. More information to make sure you are part of the eligible criteria and groupings. It also contains a lot of information on other things beyond just the vaccine, so we encourage you to go to that website. What we saw this week was following the state's announcement, we did see a massive influx of additional demand. And as a result, of course, we were ready. We've been prepared for this, so we rapidly stood up additional capacity. At the same time, though, the influx of that demand was absolutely tremendous. And just in the first 2.5 days since that state announcement this past Tuesday, we've scheduled over 80,000 appointments for vaccination. And that's an astounding number. In 2.5 days after that expansion, we've scheduled over 80,000 vaccination appointments. Half of those were done online. We strongly encourage and hope that people will use that mode because the phone line, sometimes there may be a wait given the volume of calls that are coming in. And if you're able to schedule online, we think that's the quickest and most convenient way to go ahead and get that appointment if you fit the category and you have interest in getting the vaccine. The online, for those of you that are Geisinger patients, the online patient portal, My Geisinger, is another great, efficient way to schedule. But again, the best information is on our website, geisinger.org/COVIDVAX. This unprecedented demand, I think it's worth talking a little bit about that to give you all a sense of what that looks like. The high call volumes, the high online traffic, to kind of put this into perspective for you, prior to COVID, on a typical day, in our call center, we might see about 17,000 calls per day. And now we are consistently seeing double and even triple that level of call traffic. And so you can imagine, of course, we were preparing for this and we added more resources and staffing, extended those hours. But to the extent that people can schedule online on their own, that would sure help us out, but it'll also help you all out because you'll have faster access to those schedules. We also ask people to please be patient because we know that the groupings are continuing to abide and go by the pace at which the state has been directing us. And we are still in that 1A category, but hope to get to that 1B category as the state guidelines expand to that. But that's who's on deck, if you will. So please familiarize yourself with the list. In that 1B category are folks like essential workers, like teachers, first responders, utility workers, other patients not covered under 1A. But those kinds of categories and definitions are also on our website, so you can go check that out yourself. You also may hear that some folks in the 1B grouping did already receive vaccine, and You know, we had some of that as well, and I want to make sure people are understanding how that came to be. So if you rewound the tape to last week before the expansion of the 1A category, we, like many other health systems, we had excess capacity. And of course, you don't want to waste that capacity. You don't want to waste the vaccine. And so we had been working with some groups within that 1B to still scramble for those unexpected and unpredictable kind of available capacity and getting them in as we saw those circumstances take place. Now with the expansion of 1A, we are not seeing any of that unused capacity. And so at least for now, as we work through that 1A grouping, you know, we don't anticipate those scrambling kind of scenarios to play out as much as it did last week. I think the other key point here is, and hopefully it's coming across, we continue to be ready. And we know that this will continue to expand. And so as we've done that, we've stood up additional sites and we'll continue to add more availability, again, as the resources and the supplies allow for. And so I think that gives you a sense of how we're approaching it. And of course, in the coming weeks and months, as the state and federal authorities continue to get more availability, but also others involved in the vaccination effort, we think that the communities will see more access points for them to get the vaccine for those who want one. So let me close before we turn to the Q&A. I think there's a lot of reason for good hope. I think the vaccines, like I said, early indicators with our own employees suggest that it's every bit as effective as the evidence and the science would suggest. And some of the recent trends are very promising, and we hope that they continue to head downwards. But again, way too early. We're still not out of the woods. Still significant levels of the vaccine that suggests that the precautions are as important or possibly even more so now than ever before. And so we want to continue to urge folks to wear the mask, avoid the gatherings. And like I've said in prior weeks, I think I'll close before we get to the Q&A by thanking all of our healthcare workers. Incredible teams out there doing phenomenal work, rising to this occasion. It's been an absolute inspiration to me, and I think it should be for the rest of the community as well, because there's a lot of fantastic work going on as we mount this effort against the virus. So I'm going to pull up there and turn it over to you, Matt, for our Q&A.
Thank you, Dr. Roof. Our first question is from WNEP. The COVID-19 vaccine products available in the U.S. can only last so long outside of cold storage. How does Geisinger prevent wasted vaccines when people's schedules for vaccination cancel or fail to show?
So you may have read a little bit about this, and I alluded to it earlier. When people cancel or don't show, it presents a lot of logistical challenges, because this is not like, you know, other vaccines like the flu shot where you can just put it back in the refrigerator or pull out more. This has a lot of logistical complexity to it. You've heard about the ultra-freezing temperatures at which this needs to be transported. At the same time, once you thaw it, you have about 6 hours to use it or it goes to waste. And so in those circumstances, as I described last week when we had more of that happening, we've been scrambling. And we've been scrambling to find folks in the category that we're already in or even in the next category who are eligible and wanting to get the vaccine. And so that's been our approach. Luckily, we've been able to scramble and find folks that are interested in getting the vaccine. But I think this is a good reminder to all of us. If you make an appointment, please, 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 it's important that you keep it, because if you don't keep it and we're not able to scramble, it means that there's a chance that the shot could go to waste. And of course, at this point, we as a society can't afford that. So we want to encourage all of you to make sure once you schedule an appointment, please, it's important that you keep it.
Next is from WKOK. It says, we're hearing that Geisinger reached out to the intermediate unit to give 40,000 leftover vaccine doses to school districts. Is that accurate? And what led to that? And how concerning is that?
So let me start by saying the 40,000 number, that's an astronomical, unbelievable number. I don't know where that information came out from, but I could unequivocally tell you that's not true. We did work with the intermediate units, though. As I referenced earlier, this was going on last week as we were seeing unused capacity in many of our sites. So we were working with them in anticipation that the 1B category would be coming online this week anyway, to find folks who would be interested, who would be in that 1B category, to come on in and get their vaccine. Now, this week with the expansion to the 1A category, we don't anticipate the same need to be scrambling to use up that unused capacity. I think at this point it's flipped, where now we have so much demand, unprecedented demand, and we're racing with our supply to open up as much as possible.
Next is from the Press Enterprise. It says they've gotten some calls from medical people working outside the Geisinger system who said they've tried but were unable to get a COVID vaccine from Geisinger. Wondering if it's possible that healthcare workers from outside Geisinger have been denied the vaccine, and if so, why? Can you also explain the process by which non-Geisinger healthcare workers were selected?
Yeah, if folks were qualified under that 1A category, the non-Geisinger healthcare workers, we've been vaccinating a lot of them, actually, and it's not even our selection. I think that's what the question said. We don't select. If you meet the categorization, we encourage you to go to that website and schedule. And so I know that we had a massive influx of non-Geisinger providers getting vaccinated at our sites. I think the question is a little bit puzzling because, as I said, you know, last week and even late the week before that, we had unused capacity to the point that we had to scramble. And so I think there was plenty of availability, maybe on the particular day that the person was looking for, I don't know. But we've had plenty of availability. And even before the state had come out with a 10% kind of threshold for health systems to shoot for in terms of vaccinating non-employees, we were well above that threshold. At this point, I believe we're up above 30% of the vaccines that we've given is not our own employees. And every day that keeps climbing, obviously, with the 1A expansion that we've seen. But many of them have been non-Geisinger providers. So I think the question isn't consistent with what our experience has been.
The Associated Press asks, can you address the challenges in vaccine distribution?
Oh, boy. So, there are a lot of, as I alluded to, the distribution is not straightforward or simple. I think we've all heard about the ultra-freezing temperatures. At the same time, there's obviously a lot of staffing that goes into making sure you're drawing up the vials, you're doing so in the right environment. Someone's got to actually administer the shot. Someone's got to actually capture your data because the data has to be reported to the state and the feds. There are a lot of steps to this. I'll give you one example. Because of the ultra freezers, when you open the freezer to take a tray of vaccine out, you can't open the freezer again for 2 hours because it's got to get reset to go back to those ultra freezing temperatures. And so you start getting a picture of how complicated this gets. And I mentioned earlier, once you thought, you got to use it within 6 hours. And so there's a lot of complexity around this. I haven't even mentioned the scheduling component and the call centers, you know, the call volume that I alluded to earlier. There's a lot to this, and probably even more than meets the eye. I think all of this is to say that it required a lot of preparation. You know, big, big hats off to our team. There's been a team working on this from well before the vaccines were even available. They were working on it well into the late summer, early fall. And so all that planning has really positioned us to be able to get these vaccines into people's arms. Again, as the supplies and the logistics allow for, that's what we've been doing.
Next question came in from several outlets, such as Fox 56, the Associated Press, and WKOK. How does Tuesday's announcement from the state affect Geisinger's vaccine plan, particularly with the supply and demand?
So I think we may have answered this already, but briefly, we've been working very closely, obviously staying lockstep with the state's guidelines and expansion and the criteria. But as we've gotten supply and as we've anticipated supply, we've gone ahead and scheduled the appointments and, have the machinery in place so that we're getting them into people's arms.
Also from the Associated Press, can you address the state's call to massively expand the pool of eligible people when supply has not been increased?
Yeah, so I think for us, it's we love seeing the great interest in getting the vaccine. We think it's exactly what's going to be needed to get to levels of this vaccine and being able to tamp that down in the community. The process will take time. And I think for us, we're focused on whatever the supply that we have on hand or that we expect to get. We're quickly scheduling those and opening up those availability, those appointment availability slots. And so I think that's been our approach, and that'll continue to be our approach. I think, you know, we'll have some steps of expansion where bigger groups come in and some that, you know, it'll be smaller groups coming in. I think we're going to continue to see that. But these are the higher risk folks, and it makes sense that they get vaccinated as quickly as possible.
From WNEP, it's been reported that scientists are not yet sure if the vaccine prevents an infected asymptomatic person from still spreading the disease from others. Hearing from healthy younger people asking, what's the point of getting vaccinated then? Can we really expect things to go back to normal soon if the vaccine doesn't prevent us from spreading it?
So a couple things on this. We have every reason to believe that the vaccine reduces the risk of spread and infection. I think that's absolutely true. We don't know for certain that it eliminates that risk, though, right? And that's why it's still important to wear the mask and distance and so forth until we can collectively get the activity level of the vaccine at a low enough point in the communities that everybody's at low enough risk. But until that happens, these preventive measures are still going to be necessary. The reason for young folks to get the vaccine is because this disease still afflicts young folks. I think we've said to you before, and our latest numbers have 38% of our hospital patients are actually younger than age 65. And we've also included on our social media accounts many actual case examples with real life people who have been willing to tell their story who are young. You know, I think we have 30-year-old Life Flight nurse, an employee of ours who came down with COVID. And you can go check out her story on our social media site. But, you know, she had significant symptoms. 18-year-old, I believe her name was Lauren, who also had lingering effects from COVID and heart problems that have come about. I think you've also read about the severe devastation of some folks who have, you know, called the long haulers, so to speak, where the effects of the virus last for not just a couple weeks, but even for months. And it affects their heart, their lungs, their kidney, and other organs. This is a serious disease. And then, of course, I haven't even mentioned if you are one of the folks who get severely infected. The devastating impact of this thing can be extremely serious if you're one of those folks who land in the hospital. And so all of those things put together, this vaccine becomes a no-brainer is what I would say, whether you're young or not so young.
It's time for one more question from the Press Enterprise. Elderly people have been contacting the paper asking when they might be eligible for a COVID vaccine. The State Department of Health seems to suggest 65 and over are now eligible. And the map includes places like Geisinger. What would you tell elderly people looking to get a vaccine right now in Columbia and Montour counties?
I would say schedule the appointment, and let's have you come in and get the vaccine. And again, let me take another opportunity to tell you about our website, geisinger.org/COVIDvax. It'll give you all the information you need to schedule, ideally online, but if not online, yes, you can call the call center. But if you're one of those categories and, you know, folks who are above the age of 65 or between 16 and 64 with one of the high-risk conditions, they are eligible at this point. We would encourage them to go ahead and get vaccinated.